Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Friday, December 7th, 2018. It appears that the nation of Ecuador has reached an agreement with Britain, which will allow them to push Julian Assange out of their embassy in London. Now, I consider this to be a very important story about First Amendment, about press freedoms, and about the plight of Julian Assange. And I know he's not considered to be a sympathetic character, and I don't care about that. These are important, substantive issues. And we see the corporate media in this country ignore this looming showdown that could lead to the prosecution of Assange under the sealed indictment that we now know exists because of blunders by the special counsel. And so, in my morning San Francisco Chronicle, they take stories that they don't think are very important, and they reduce them to about 200 words. And they put them together in a kind of news digest with a map. And so this one shows that the story came from London, as if you couldn't figure that out. It reads, Ecuador President Lenin Moreno says Britain has provided sufficient guarantees for Julian Assange to leave his government's embassy in London, where the WikiLeaks founder has been since 2012. Lenin Moreno said Thursday his government had received written assurances from the British government not to extradite the Australian activist to any country where he would face the death penalty. Now, that could include the United States. But what if Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker, the goalkeeper, says, all right, we won't seek the death penalty, just send us Julian Assange? So this article is so digested, so compressed, that I can only ask questions. It doesn't answer important questions. And then the final sentence is fascinating, because whoever wrote this, the Associated Press or wherever it came from, it reads, Assange has long maintained that he faces charges under seal in the U.S. for revealing highly sensitive government information on his website. Well, that has been confirmed. It is not simply the dangerous, desperate fantasies of Julian Assange. No, our government slipped up, and the special counsel, in a filing in a case we still don't know about, said, well, you know, once they grab Assange, we can unseal this case. So this is a situation that I find perplexing, very frustrating to me, that the very media outlets that want to maintain their status and be able to conduct investigative journalism, publish government documents that were leaked or provided to them in some unauthorized manner, that could all go down in flames if Julian Assange is put on trial in the United States. These entities freely published the fruits of Julian Assange's labors on a repeated basis. And yet they do not respect the tenets, the fundamental premises of a free press. Or at least they're not willing to fight for it, because I guess they feel that they're a real press and he's not. And I do not accept the distinction that is implicit in that argument. We also are getting word a former consul and first secretary of that Ecuadorian embassy in London has put the final nail in the coffin on the false report from The Guardian, now about 2 weeks ago, claiming without evidence that former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort visited WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange three times, 2013, 2015, and in the spring of 2016. Fidel Narvaez, who worked at the London Embassy from 2010 to 2018, has told reporters that The Guardian's claim is entirely false. And a newspaper has also reviewed a copy of correspondence between The Guardian and Narvaez, in which he makes a formal complaint accusing the paper of fabricating that story about, a previous story about the alleged Kremlin plot to smuggle Assange to Russia. Narvaez, initially consul, then first secretary at the embassy, told reporters that, to his knowledge, Manafort never visited the embassy while he was employed there, and his account supports points made by Glenn Greenwald about the protocols. Greenwald wrote it's impossible for any visitor to enter the embassy without going through strict protocols, leaving a clear record. The embassy requires approval from the written approval from the ambassador. You have to leave a copy of a picture ID. And he describes the embassy as the most surveilled location on Earth. Not only are there cameras positioned on neighboring buildings recording every visitor, but inside the building, every movement is recorded with closed-circuit TV cameras 24/7. In fact, security personnel have always spied on Assange and his visitors. It is simply not possible that Manafort visited the embassy. And the other confirming data is, when you look at Manafort's passport, which was entered into evidence in the trial that convicted him, well, he actually had three passports. One was a copy, I guess one was expired. Anyway, it simply shows that he made only two visits to England in 2010 and in 2012, and those are not dates that were asserted by The Guardian. Meanwhile, in Ireland, they are moving forward as the United States is moving backward on reproductive rights and a woman's right to control her body. As the U.S. rolls back access to abortion and even to contraception, the Roman Catholic nation of Ireland has passed a law that introduces legal abortion, and it is free to any woman who seeks it. Now, it's a 12-week, limit on access to abortion. But this is a very progressive move in a country that has languished because of the outsized influence of Rome, the Catholic Church, on its political policies. And just compare that to what is going on here in the repressive, regressive United States of America. While we're in Europe, a quick look at the change of the guard coming up in Germany. The Conservative Party, the Christian Democratic Union, has opted for continuity rather than change. Today they elected Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer, an ally of Angela Merkel, to succeed her as party leader, giving her the inside track on becoming the next chancellor of Germany. And, you know, we've been reporting to you almost a daily basis now about the contested election in Congressional District 9 in North Carolina. And the latest is it appears that the Republicans recognize that there is a serious fraud problem there, and they appear to be giving way. The Republican candidate has said that he would agree to a new election because of the widespread allegations of fraud there. But we're not the only country that has these issues. In Afghanistan, the site of the whatever war and now 17 years of occupation by the United States, an election complaints agency yesterday invalidated all of the votes cast in Kabul province in October's parliamentary election. Now, there is another layer of bureaucracy. This ruling sets up a stalemate with the agency administering the vote, which is called the Independent Election Commission. The commission said it would ignore the decision invalidating the votes, which would ordinarily require a new election within 7 days, and would certify the results of Kabul's vote in coming days. That sounds like the Republicans in Georgia and Florida just a couple of weeks ago. Well, we'll see how that is resolved in Afghanistan. Back here in the U.S. of A., about 2 weeks remain before the wrap-up of the lame duck session of the House and the Senate. And there's an interesting dispute underway that does not follow the typical party divide between Democrats and Republicans. There are, by some counts, as many as, 28 Republicans who say that they would vote for this really weak, it's a modest bill called the First Step Act. And I support this, as modest as it is, because it's better than nothing. And what it would do is address some of the inequities in our federal sentencing guidelines. And with 28 Republicans, at least many of whom have said they would vote for the bill, all 49 Senate Democrats are on board, you would bet that Mitch McConnell would put this on the floor and it would pass. But John Cornyn, who is the whip, he tries to line up the votes on the Republican side. He's being accused of trying to run out the clock and keep this from being voted on during this lame duck session. And he's supported by Tom Cotton, the knuckle-dragging senator from Arkansas, who has warned his colleagues that they could lose their jobs, they could lose seats, if they vote for this ease-on-crime law. And he even refers to it as a jailbreak bill. And that is so far from the truth, because estimates indicate that no more than 4,000 to 7,000 people would be able to petition. They wouldn't be automatically released. They would be able to petition to have their sentences reduced. And Tom Cotton thinks that that's just way, way too liberal. Now, in addition, the contentious part of the bill is that it would make changes to minimum mandatory sentences, which are the bane of our criminal justice system and have been ratcheted up over recent years. Bill Clinton signed some of these laws as well. And I do not support minimum mandatory sentences. It ties the hands of a judge to issue a sentence that is consistent with the facts of the matter before that court. And so Tom Cotton is trying to strip out the language that would permit judges in certain cases to do what's called a downward departure in the sentencing. Now, Mike Flynn is the latest beneficiary of what's called a downward departure. Bob Mueller has said, 0 to 6 months, that's the most of a sentence this guy should get. And that comes into conflict with the guidelines for the single count that Flynn has pled guilty to, which is lying to the FBI. So Donald Trump went into the archives of Republican attorneys general, and he found a guy who is still alive and willing to revisit his job as the head of the Justice Department. And today, Trump announced as he headed to a helicopter that he is going to appoint William Barr as the next attorney general. He served under Poppy Bush, who just died, from 1991 to 1993. Now, this sets up another very tense process, because when the Senate moves to consider the confirmation of Bill Barr as the next attorney general, they're going to hear his statements where he's criticized his old buddy Bob Mueller, who he worked with at the Justice Department back in the 90s. Because Barr has criticized Mueller for hiring too many prosecutors who are identified as Democrats, and he has defended Trump's calls for a new criminal investigation into Hillary Clinton, including the Uranium One deal. And as you know, I think that is open for honest investigation. I don't know that we can get that in the current climate. Anyway, Barr will be challenged to recuse himself. And I'm sure that Trump this time has gotten assurances that before he appoints Barr, unlike Jeff Sessions, that Barr will agree to serve as a corrupted attorney general, the president's personal advocate, and that he will pledge not to recuse himself. So we'll get into this when his confirmation hearings come up. The dirt on Bill Barr, and there's a lot of it, from his service as attorney general and then as a White House official in the administration of George W. Bush, where he advocated for torture and indefinite detention for so-called enemy combatants. And he also is well known as a guy who has a strong belief in outsized presidential authority. But there is this quote hanging out there from 1992 where Barr said, "The Attorney General's oath to uphold the Constitution raises the question whether his duty lies ultimately with the president who appointed him or more abstractly with the rule of law. I said in my confirmation hearings and have said several times since that the Attorney General's ultimate allegiance must be to the rule of law." Yeah, well, we'll put that to the test. And I don't think Ultimately, he will pass it. That's just my opinion. Now, Trump likes to appoint people into his administration who he's watched on TV. And he's done it again. Heather Nauert, who used to be on Fox and Friends, the Donald's favorite TV show, where they only tell him what he wants to hear. Well, Heather Nauert went from Fox to being a spokesperson at the State Department. She survived the Rex Tillerson administration and has been serving Mike Pompeo since he was elevated. And speaking of Rex Tillerson, he gave an interview this week where he said that Trump is undisciplined, doesn't like to read, and had to be told what was illegal. So Rexon is starting to loosen his lips and maybe tell the truth. So Heather Nauert has no foreign policy experience, has never served other than the State Department job. But being a flack, a mouthpiece who reads talking points and, you know, kind of hews to them as the press tries to challenge them, that's very different from being a diplomat running the U.S. operation at the United Nations. But, of course, number one is she's a proven loyalist to this president, and she can be expected to parrot his crazy foreign policy positions in her post there at the U.N. She, of course, needs confirmation by the Senate, and that should be a fun show as well. Now, speaking of Fox, we have a defection to report. Yes, that little mother, Tucker Carlson, gave an interview, and I don't know why, to a Swiss newspaper. And he essentially said that Trump is lazy and stupid. Now, those were not his words. Here's a quote. Speaking with Die Weltwoche, Switzerland's leading German language weekly, he cataloged a list of grievances and failures regarding Trump's ability to deliver on anything he pledged during his campaign. Quote, his chief promises were that he would build the wall, defund Planned Parenthood, and repeal Obamacare. And he hasn't done any of those things. I've come to believe that Trump's role is not as a conventional president who promises to get certain things achieved to the Congress and then does. Not only has Trump failed to come through, Carlson said, he might not even be able to. Quote, I don't think he's capable. I don't think he's capable of sustained focus. I don't think he understands the system. I don't think the Congress is on his side. I don't think his own agencies support him. Now, this is pretty honest, and I don't dispute it. He went on to say that legislating is too complex for Trump. You really have to understand how it works. You have to be very focused on getting it done. And he knows very little about the legislative process, hasn't learned anything, and surrounded himself with people that can get it done. He hasn't done all the things you need to do. It's mostly his fault that he hasn't achieved those things. He failed to mention that Mexico's going to pay for the wall, too. And speaking of the wall, it didn't keep out Victorina Morales. She has been working for 5 years now as a housekeeper at the Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster, New Jersey. She is the personal housekeeper to Der Donald. We're told that she even irons his underpants, makes his bed. She was given a certificate recently in July from the White House Communications Agency. And she has just revealed that she is undocumented. She came from raising corn in rural Guatemala to fluffing pillows at an exclusive golf resort. And she illegally crossed into our country, she says, in 1999 and was hired with phony documents at the Trump property. She says that two supervisors at the club were aware that her documents were phony, and they took steps to help them. Help her and others evade detection and hold on to their jobs. Also, Sandra Diaz, a 46-year-old native of Costa Rica, said she, too, was undocumented when she worked at Bedminster between 2010 and 2013. Yes, Trump says, do as I say, not as I do. Oh, and one more. No, I got two more from the Trump file today. Next week, we should expect proposals to significantly weaken the Obama-era regulation of clean water. The Obama rule, designed to limit pollution in about 60% of the nation's bodies of waters, It extended existing federal authority to limit pollution in large bodies of water like Chesapeake Bay, Puget Sound, to smaller bodies that drain into them like tributaries, streams, and wetlands. But this was a big talking point during the mob rallies that Trump held on his campaign in 2016, and the deregulation, the loosening of these regulations, is expected to benefit real estate developers and golf course owners, along with some family farms that are located near small waterways. So this is one of those cases where it doesn't matter what science says. It doesn't matter what is good for people and their health. It's all about money and about loosening those onerous regulations that bother Trump so much. And my final item in the Trump file today is about Bob Mueller. And Trump is so nervous he's been tweeting compulsively, continuing his attacks on the special counsel. And Mueller's people will make two court appearances today, one to explain why they ended their plea deal with former campaign manager Paul Manafort, who we've been told lied repeatedly and was not forthcoming. We know that his lawyers have been leaking information to Trump's lawyers about the Mueller investigation. And also today, Mueller's office will file sentencing memos for Michael Cohen. And if the Mike Flynn sentencing memo from earlier this week is any indication, Cohen's singing to the prosecutors should earn him a real soft sentence. So we'll have to wait and see how that turns out. Let's see. The Guardian here is quoting Renato Mariotti, a former federal prosecutor, said he was eager to see whether Mueller's prosecutors directly or tacitly support Cohen's assertions that Trump directed him to make hush payments to women in violation of campaign finance law, and that he let the White House know what he planned to tell Congress about the Moscow skyscraper project, which Cohen now says he lied about in congressional testimony. So it'll be very interesting to see. Also, we've noticed that Mueller uses these opportunities to put more information on the record from his investigation, and we'll have to see where it all goes. But I don't expect anything to confirm that there was collusion between Russian officials and the Trump campaign, which, of course, was the original mandate of the Mueller special counsel appointment. Every day I pause for a second to thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. Let's see who's on the list today. It's Jerry in Southeast Portland. Richard Crosby kicks in $10 a month. Siri Walgren, the original Siri, not that Apple robot voice. She's a $5 a month supporter. And let's go for one more. Marvin Rasmussen, he also kicks in $5 a month. I believe many of you are capable of contributing to this podcast. I don't presume it. I know lots of people on fixed incomes who simply don't have an extra $5 a month. But if you do, I'm not going to shame you. I'm just going to encourage you to visit peterbcollins.com, find the menu tab, click on it, then click on Become a Subscriber. You land on the sign-up page, and bingo, in a minute or two, you can have your own PayPal account set up and kick in $5 or $10 a month. If you go for the $50 annual subscription, I will send you our bonus gift. It's John Dist's rock and roll CD called American University. And, of course, if you're allergic to PayPal, yo comprendo, you can address your correspondence to me at Box 150-660, San Rafael, California, 94915. That's Box 150-660, San Rafael, zip 94915. Well, at Harvard's Kennedy Center, there's orientation underway for the newly elected members to the House of Representatives. And we're learning very early here about the outspoken progressives who've been elected, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York and Rashida Tlaib of Michigan. And I hope I'm pronouncing that name right, but that's the best I can do. Anyway, the two of them were attending these sessions, and they put up on Twitter For example, Ocasio-Cortez said, right now freshman members of Congress are at a, quote, bipartisan orientation with briefings on issues. Number of corporate CEOs we've listened to here, 4. Number of labor leaders, 0. And Ocasio-Cortez went on to say, our bipartisan congressional orientation is co-hosted by a corporate lobbyist group, citing the American Enterprise Interest Institute, which is funded by the Koch brothers. She went on to say, other members have quietly expressed to me their concern that this wasn't told to us in advance. Lobbyists are here. Goldman Sachs is here. Where's labor, activists, frontline community leaders? There we go again. Tlaib, for her part, called attention to a speech by Gary Cohn, the former Goldman Sachs president who left his post as Trump's chief economic advisor earlier this year. And according to Tlaib, Cohn condescendingly told the freshman members, you guys are way over your head. You don't know how the game is played. On Twitter, Tlaib responded, no, Gary, you don't know what's coming. A revolutionary Congress that puts people over profits. And here's a quick rundown on the list of bipartisan speakers, okay? And they represent the corporate interests of both parties. Elaine Chao, who's married to Mitch McConnell, now the Secretary of Transportation. Ash Carter, Obama's former Secretary of Defense. Mitch Landrieu, the pro-corporate nominal Democrat, former mayor of New Orleans. Let's see here. Mary Barra, chairman and CEO of General Motors. Arthur Brooks from the American Enterprise Institute. Gary Cohn, we mentioned. David Gergen, who has kissed the ass of every president since Nixon. You get the idea. And in Michigan, one of the states where the lame duck Republicans are trying to rig the system to limit the power of the Democrats who will take office in January, well, it's getting pretty interesting because Michigan is copying, the Republicans there are copying the tactics that were started in North Carolina, embellished by the Republicans in Wisconsin, where Scott Walker, the governor, is being lobbied by his replacement, Tony Evers, but I think he'll sign the crap and try to restrict Evers and the incoming Attorney General in Wisconsin. Now, across the Great Lakes in Michigan, the Republicans are trying to ram through things, legislation that would limit the power of Gretchen Whitmer, who's been elected governor, Dana Nessel, the incoming Attorney General, and Jocelyn Benson, who is about to become the first Democrat to be elected Secretary of State in more than 20 years. Now, it's not lost on many that these are all women, and that Republican white men are trying to throttle them and keep them from having the full authorities that these men have enjoyed up until now. The difference in Michigan is, we hope, Rick Snyder. He is the businessman who is just completing his second term as governor. He's termed out. And he's at least making statements through his press spokes that the governor will carefully examine the coming bills and take a nonpartisan approach. Quote, in this case where the authority of different branches of government is affected, he will look at the bills as if he were continuing as governor. He won't look at the bills based on who is in the governor's office or which party they represent. Well, I'm holding on to these words until, of course, Rick Snyder signs that crap legislation. That is my expectation. And Rick Snyder should be in prison right now for poisoning the water supply in Flint, but he's not. And finally, in Charlottesville, Virginia, the jury in the case, the murder trial of the Ohio man accused of intentionally ramming his car into the crowd of counter-protesters at the white nationalist rally last year that killed Heather Heyer. Well, the jury has received the case. 21-year-old James Alex Fields Jr., who grew up near Toledo, he's charged with first-degree murder in the death of Heather Heyer and other felonies for that crash last August. And anybody who's seen the video can tell that he did it intentionally. because he drove quickly into that crowd, and then he backed out just as quickly, almost, as he had plowed into them. This certainly appears premeditated to me. His defense attorneys say that Fields was frightened, that he had urine thrown at him. He'd been yelled at. He saw a large crowd down the street surrounding two other cars and feared he would be attacked. Now, I believe every defendant has the right to an effective defense. But I also call bullshit when I hear bullshit, and that's bullshit. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Feel free to share it far and wide. You'll find it on YouTube. And I'm still Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.